This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Leviticus. And now here's Pastor Sandy teaching through the book of Leviticus, chapter 23.
In Leviticus chapter 23, God has published his calendar, and he has established some special days. You see, when God created the universe, he established a continuum of space and mass and time. And he is the Lord over all three. He has jurisdiction over all space. He is sovereign over all matter. And he is the author of all time. Every second that ticks off your clock belongs to God. And we are as responsible to God for how we use time as how we occupy space and how we employ and utilize matter. In ancient Israel, God set up signposts to remind his people of his lordship over space and matter and time. His lordship over space was seen in his ownership. All the land belonged to God. His sovereignty over matter was seen in the offerings. A portion of the harvest, a first of the flock, a portion of their material abundance was given as an offering to God. And his lordship over time was seen in the observance of certain holy days. Guys, we are all living on borrowed time. Every second of your life belongs to God, and he calls us all to give back to him a portion of the time that he has given to us. Thus the Hebrews were called by God to set aside various feast days where they might celebrate God's blessing and God's goodness, special days of worship and rest. And the feasts that God appointed for Israel were all cyclical. They all occurred at different intervals. The Sabbath, for example, was a once-a-week celebration. The feast of the new moon occurred monthly. The Jewish calendar was a lunar calendar, not a solar calendar. It was based on 30-day cycles. And every so often, because of they were out of sync with the solar year, they had to add a month of 30 days to balance things out. There were actually 7 annual feasts. 4 were in the spring, and 3 were in the fall of the year. The spring feasts were these: unleavened bread, Passover, the feast of first fruits, and the Feast of Weeks. The fall feasts were 3. They included the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles. These 7 annual feasts are what we're going to be talking about tonight. There were also 2 wintertime feasts I might make mention of. Hanukkah, or the Feast of Lights, comes in December according to our calendar, and Purim, which according to our calendar is usually between February and March. Purim springs from the days of Queen Esther in the story you read about in the book of Esther. And Hanukkah, or the Feast of Lights, comes from the time between the Old and New Testaments when God miraculously cleansed the temple and delivered the temple from the Syrians and then cleansed it and preserved the lights so that of the dedication and so forth. And there's a wonderful story regarding that. Both feasts were added later by the Jews. And though they certainly give God thanks and praise, they were not part of God's original calendar. That included the 7 feasts that we'll study. In addition to these feasts, though, there was also a Sabbath year. 1 year in 7. We'll talk about that next week. And then every 50th year also had a very special significance. It was the year of Jubilee. Well, in chapter 23, verses 1 and 2, God prefaces all these feasts by saying, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." Now, the Hebrew word translated feast means appointment. These were appointments that God made with his people. God blocked out his calendar for them, and he expects his people to block out their calendar for him. You don't snub God when you got an appointment with him. Guys, we should all put on our calendar certain times where we can spend that time with God. We all should keep a weekly Sabbath. We all should have meaningful holiday celebrations, timely getaways, men's retreats, do your heart good, women's retreats, annual Bible conferences, and so forth. God says to Moses, these are my feasts. And when God makes an appointment with you, make sure that you keep it. The feasts that we celebrate today are different than those that the Jews celebrated, but our feasts are no less important to our spiritual life as their feasts were to them. There's an old saying that I heard many years ago that stuck with me, and it saved me from many a bout with burnout. You want to write it down. It goes like this. The bow that is always bent ceases to shoot straight. Hey, if you never relax the string, if you keep that bow in constant stress and tension, it will eventually warp and it will start to lose its aim. And the same is true with the human psyche. Our bodies and minds and spirits need frequent intervals of rest and rejuvenation in order to operate at optimal levels. You know, it's now been proven medically that a night's sleep alone does not meet man's need for rest. During the day, our body breathes in 30 ounces of oxygen, but it exhales 31 ounces, and therefore we end up 1 ounce short every day. Now, at night, we breathe back more oxygen than we use, but not enough to make up for what we lost during the day. We recover 5/6 of an ounce, which means at the end of each day, we still end up 1/6 of an ounce short. A night's rest does not replenish the day's work. And by the time 6 days elapse, we're 6/6 or a full ounce short. If we work the next day, the 7th day, we never recover. But if we take that 7th day off, we then save an ounce of oxygen that we need to balance out our system and catch ourselves up. God had it all worked out in advance. This is why Jesus said in Mark chapter 2, verse 27, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for you. You need that rest. You need that daily interval of rest and rejuvenation. And not only the Sabbath, but all the Levitical feasts were wonderful gifts from God. They were intended by God for our benefit. As I mentioned, we as Gentile believers no longer celebrate the same feast days as the Old Testament Hebrews. Nevertheless, we can learn from the principles. We too need to set aside weekly and annual intervals to rest and to refresh and to refocus spiritually. The first appointment that God mentions is the weekly Sabbath. Respect for the Sabbath was the fourth of the Ten Commandments. Verse 3 tells us, 6 days shall work be done, but the 7th day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Notice the flow of this verse. 6 days shall work be done, but on the Sabbath you shall do no work. You see, the Sabbath is a contrast to the days that precede it. The Hebrew word Sabbath means intermission. And that's what the Sabbath is. It's a break in the daily routine. It's a rest stop in the rat race. It is a timeout in the big game. One author writes, on the Sabbath, every day gives way to holiday, and the Jewish world rests. 6 days are given to work, but the 7th is set aside to remember why we work the other 6 days. It's the day that reminds us of the reason we do what we do the rest of the week. It's the day to regroup and refocus and rejuvenate and restore. The Sabbath day is a day to emphasize two activities. On the Sabbath, we need to pray and play. The Sabbath is a day to enjoy God's blessings, and as you do, make sure you say thanks to Him for them. You know, today we use the term holidays. It's the combination of two English words, holy and days. And holidays were originally holy days. They were days marked out as holy and set apart for the worship of God and for the celebration of His wonderful works. The problem today with our Sabbaths is how we spend them. Rather than holy days, we go to Disney World or Six Flags. And when we come home, we're more exhausted than when we left. We have to take a vacation to recover from our vacation. Trust me, a trip to Six Flags is not what I call a holy convocation. Sometimes we take our Sabbaths and we do work of another sort rather than rest. We labor in the yard, or we toil around under the hood of the car, or we remodel the bathroom. In other words, we just find other ways to stress out. Verse 3 tells us that the Sabbath is set aside for solemn or for serious rest. We need one day each week where we're all about serious rest. Not necessarily a day of inactivity, but we need to do something on that day that rejuvenates, that restores rather than drains. Hey, if you were to make an appointment to see your pastor for counseling, and while you were explaining your problem to me, I was working on a model airplane, you'd be kind of ticked off, wouldn't you? I mean, at least the guy can give me his attention. I've made an appointment with him, no less. Well, I think this is how God feels when He makes appointments with us, only to have us ignore Him or neglect Him or to carry on doing other things. We need to set aside times to strengthen our grip on God. Well, verse 4 tells us, "These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover." Notice here, on the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. Take note, the Hebrew day begins at twilight, at sundown. It's interesting. God wanted His day to begin with rest, not end with rest. I think that's important. God's plan for us is to gain strength from Him and then turn around and use that strength to work. We in turn go off and start our day with work, and then when we get home, we finally think about God. God's plan is for us to gain strength from Him, then begin the work that He has for us. According to verse 5, these spring feasts begin with the Lord's Passover. You remember, on the eve of Israel's exit from Egypt, God gave to Moses directions, instructions for how to celebrate Passover. Exodus 12 tells of the festivities and how they revolved around a meal. Hebrew families would all sit down together and they ate bitter herbs to remind them of the 400 years of Egyptian bondage. Roasted lamb recalled the lamb's blood that was spread on the doorposts and the thresholds of the house, the blood that caused the death plague to pass over the house, thus the name Passover. The unleavened bread spoke of the faith of the Hebrews, how they trusted in God's promise. Their exodus the next morning provided no time for the bread to rise. That's why they ate unleavened bread. It was a symbol of their faith. Verse 4 tells us that the Passover was celebrated on the 14th day of the first month of the Jewish calendar, or Nisan. It's the first month of a new year, and it symbolizes a new start for Israel. On our calendar, Passover occurs late March, early April. Today, Passover, or as the Jews call it, Pesach, is the most observed of all the feasts. A 1990 survey said that 80% of Jews worldwide attend a Passover Seder. It's very popular. And remember, Jesus was crucified on what day? On what feast? On Passover, or Nisan the 14th. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7 tells us, "For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us." Paul called Jesus our Passover. Jesus is our Passover lamb. And when His blood is spread on the doorposts and the thresholds of your heart, the judgment of God passes over you. You're delivered from your sin. You remember on the night of the Passover, just before he was crucified, Jesus gave new meaning to the age-old celebration. He took that unleavened bread and the wine and he called it my body and my blood. Jesus took a 1,500-year-old tradition at the time and he gave it a revolutionary new meaning. He said that this is a new covenant that I'm making with you. From now on, these elements will represent me and my work for you. Hey, through Christ our Passover, we too can have a brand new start in life. Well, verse 6 mentions the next spring feast, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. You remember, leaven is a type of sin. And so following their deliverance from Egypt, they were to spend 7 days ridding themselves and their houses of that which represented sin. Hey, we need to understand this. When Jesus delivers us, he doesn't expect us to clean up first. Jesus takes us just as we are and right where we're at. Isn't that beautiful? Leaven in your life doesn't stop you from coming to Jesus. It doesn't stop you from being forgiven and being set free and him making you his child. You don't have to clean up your life before you come to Jesus. But once you belong to him and once you've tasted of his love and of his grace, as a thank you to God, you'll want to get rid of the leaven in your life. The things that cause pride and puff you up, the sins that are displeasing to God, you'll want to get rid of those things. You'll want to live a life that pleases God. It's been said a believer isn't sinless, but he does sin less and less and less. Well, on the first day, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it, but you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord for 7 days. The 7th day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. Notice the first and the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread was a special Sabbath. And for those of us who hold to the theory that Jesus was crucified on Thursday, not Friday, this helps to explain why the disciples were in such a hurry to bury the body. The next day was a Sabbath. But it was not a Saturday. It was a special Sabbath. It was the first day of the unleavened feast of the unleavened bread. You see, there were two Sabbaths that week. And John 19, verse 31, makes this same implication. And of course, the reason I hold to a Thursday crucifixion is that it allows us to take Jesus' words in Matthew 12 very literally. You remember what he said? As Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And when you think about it, the only way Jesus could have been buried for 72 hours is that if the Passover had occurred on a Thursday. But you can disagree with me, that's fine. A lot of people do. Verse 9 discusses the third spring feast, which was the Feast of First Fruits. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give to you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. He shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now we're still in the midst of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. On the day after the Sabbath, which followed the Passover. Now, you've got the Passover. Then you've got the special Sabbath that begins the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That was Friday. Then you've got the regular Sabbath, which was Saturday. And then you've got this day, the first day of the Feast of First Fruits. On that day, the priest brought the initial yield of the barley harvest, and he offered it to God. And this was a way of saying thanks to God for providing their needs. And it's exactly what we do when we tithe our income, when we give back to God the first fruits rather than the leftovers, the very best of the harvest because of all that he's given to us. And notice the priest made his offering in a very interesting way. He waved a bundle of barley up and down, and then he waved it from side to side. A vertical motion and then a horizontal motion. In essence, when the priest offered this sacrifice, he was drawing a cross. First vertical, then horizontal. The wave offering was a picture of Jesus, but there's an even clearer picture of Jesus on the Feast of First Fruits. For Jesus was resurrected on the day after that Saturday, which was Sunday. Resurrection Sunday was also the Jewish Feast of First Fruits. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 23 calls Jesus the first fruits of the resurrection. He was the initial yield of God's future harvest. We are going to be harvested one day. We're going to be resurrected just as Jesus was. But he was the first fruits. He was the first to overcome death and inherit an incorruptible body. And guess what? His resurrection took place on the Jewish feast of first fruits. Verse 12. And you shall offer on that day when you wave the sheaf a male lamb of the first year, without blemish, as a burnt offering to the Lord. Its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah, or about 1/5 of a bushel, of fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire to the Lord for a sweet aroma. And its drink offering shall be of wine, 1/4 of a hin, which is about 1.5 quarts. You shall eat neither bread nor parched grain nor fresh grain until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all of your dwellings. The feast of what? First fruits. The last of the spring feasts was the Feast of Weeks. The Hebrew name for it was Shavat, which means weeks. And it was a joyous time. At Shavat, people would decorate their homes with fresh flowers. For some reason, cheesecakes became associated with the Feast of Weeks. Why? I have no idea. But if I were a Jew, I'd be glad. As I mentioned earlier, the Hebrew word that is typically translated feast means appointment. But there is another Hebrew word, hagim, which can also be rendered feast. And hagim means to be giddy, or to dance, or to celebrate, to make merry. And it was used of three of these feasts we're studying. Unleavened bread, the Feast of Weeks that we're talking about now, and then the feast that's yet to come, tabernacles. It's interesting. These were the same three feasts that God ordered to be celebrated in Jerusalem. These were to be happy times. Verse 15, and you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, or first fruits, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. So 49 days after the Feast of First Fruits, and then the day after that, count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath, then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. This was the Feast of Weeks, 7 weeks, 50 days to the feast. The Greek word translated 50 is the word Pentecost, which is the name of this feast that's given to it in the New Testament. On our calendar today, the Feast of Pentecost occurs in late May, early June. He says, you shall bring from your dwellings 2 wave loaves of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be of fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits to the Lord. Now, Pentecost, or weeks, celebrated the end of the spring harvest. During the Feast of Weeks, the priest would bring 2 loaves of grain to the Lord. And unlike at Passover, those 2 loaves were baked with leaven. They weren't unleavened, they were baked with leaven. It's fascinating that in the same year that Jesus fulfilled the Passover by becoming our Passover lamb, our sacrifice, in the same year that he fulfilled the Feast of First Fruits, by rising from the dead to begin this end time harvest that we're a part of, likewise, in that same year, Jesus fulfilled the symbolism associated with the Feast of Pentecost.
That's all the time for today on Sandy Adams Radio. We hope you've been blessed by Pastor Sandy's teaching from the book of Leviticus. We'd like to invite you to learn more about this ministry by visiting our website, sandyadams.org. There you'll find a vast archive of previous messages to listen to, download, and share, as well as some great in-depth articles from Pastor Sandy on the Calvary Chapel movement and ministry in general. Did you know that you can also take Sandy Adams Radio on the go? Simply download the Sandy Adams Teaching app on your smartphone. You'll then have great, sound, biblical teachings to add a spiritual boost to your busy day right at your fingertips. Also, on our website, sandyadams.org, we have many resources that are available for purchase. Grab a CD copy of a previous broadcast or browse books written by Pastor Sandy. If today's message has touched your life, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us through the website or give us a call. Our phone number is 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. Let us know how we can pray for you as you journey through this life, or ask us any questions you may have about our ministry. We're so grateful you joined us today on Sandy Adams Radio. Be sure to tune in again as we learn more from the book of Leviticus, as Pastor Sandy will continue teaching verse by verse and chapter by chapter on the next edition of Sandy Adams Radio.